Robin, I'm here at a crucial moment for Brexit. Prime Minister Theresa May presented her plan for Brexit, for Britain's exit from the European Union to her cabinet today. They've been meeting. They are meeting at this hour. The meeting is going longer than expected. We're waiting to see what will happen. But reactions to her plan are coming in. This is former Prime Minister Tony Blair, who spoke to the BBC today.
Look, this is a bad deal, and it's really not going to work. And that's why I think the only way you can resolve this issue finally is to go back to the people and say, look, you're going to have to give us a clear mandate.
So he's saying there should be a second referendum, one of many options. There is enormous uncertainty here and very high stakes. We're going to have more from London throughout the show.
Oh, I'm really interested, especially since President Trump just had an overseas trip. So we'll get some reaction to that. But meanwhile, in Washington, it was orientation day for new members of Congress, a record number of women. This morning, everyone took that group photo on the steps of the Capitol.
After I do my shot, you can look anywhere you want. I need everybody right here. 3, 2, 1.
Everybody laughing, very collegial. But from here, both parties will retreat to their respective corners and probably, Jeremy, with 2020 in mind.
Oh, my gosh. We're already at 2020. Matt Mikowiak is with us. He's a Republican strategist. He's in Austin, Texas. And Jamal Simmons, Democrat and host of at Hill TV in Washington. Welcome to both of you. And let me start, just because we're here in London today, with a view of American politics from Europe, which has been in the news, a very public disagreement this week between the French president, Emmanuel Macron, and President Trump about the forces of nationalism, which Macron warns about as old demons, which are coming back to the surface. Trump skipped a World War I observance in France and in tweets yesterday brushed off Macron, hectoring him about World War II and French wine tariffs. Matt, let's start with you. What do you make of this? Is this an uncomfortable moment for these two or something more serious?
Well, I think it's a reflection of disagreements between the two countries and really between the two leaders on a range of issues, trade being part of that, certainly immigration, the way the two countries address the immigration issue and what Trump would want to do versus what Macron would want to do. Macron obviously proposed this European army, which is something President Trump didn't respond very kindly to. So, look, I think President Trump likes trying to build strong relationships one-on-one with world leaders. He likes trying to use those relationships to improve America's position related to its economic, you know, position related to trade, related to security, related to economic deals and economic development. And really up until very recently, it appeared that the Trump and Macron had a pretty strong relationship. So there's obviously some kind of breakdown. I suspect that this is not something new. I suspect it's something that's been building over weeks or months in private calls and meetings at senior levels of both their staffs.
Well, Matt, that's what we're reading, that, you know, internal reports are that the president is seething over the midterms. Do you worry, you know, the appearance is of a very Shakespearean character, alone on the hill, not marching with world leaders down the Champs-Élysées, having this, you know, I mean, the French and the Americans, the, you know, World War II is kind of a sacred conversation, and using it to kind of throw a spitball at the French president. Yeah, I think the comment was, you French were on the verge of learning German when we came along and saved you. I mean, do you worry about his state of mind?
Well, I think he's obviously under even more pressure now than he was. We know that you know, additional indictments are likely in the Mueller inquiry. We know that Mueller is preparing his report to Congress. We know that Congress is about to change hands on the House side and that those committees are going to be aggressively using subpoena power to investigate him. So his presidency is about to get far more challenging in the next 2 years than it was in the last 2 years. And so I think all this is happening you know, at a kind of a delicate time for him, and he's trying to think about what happens next. I think this is an opportunity for him to pivot, focus on issues where both parties can come together, infrastructure being one, drug prices perhaps being another. There's an opportunity there. We'll see if he seizes it.
Well, Jamal, I don't want to psychoanalyze President Trump too much here, but I do wonder, do you think that he thought that he was going to do a lot better in the midterm election and that right now he's kind of lashing out because he's realizing that it actually was a much bigger blue wave than he thought. And people are you know, feeling comfortable, like Macron and Justin Trudeau, by the way, who made a comment about being out in the rain, which Trump didn't do to go to that cemetery. People feel comfortable sort of attacking him as well.
Yeah, the phrase l'enfant ridiculous is what comes to mind. I think that the president reacts much like a child whenever he finds himself in a difficult situation. And it looks like now he is, you know, he's lashing out at our allies. He's done that so many times in the past. He's undermined NATO. He's undermined trade agreements. He's putting tariffs on friends. He's going at the China relationship. The way he behaves on the stage is a little bit like, you know, the Bam Bam Rubble of the American political scene.
Is that a Flintstones reference?
Yeah,
I think it was.
It is a Flintstones reference. I'm mixing my metaphors all over the place. But I think that I think that what's dangerous for the American public is to have a president who doesn't seem to be able to contain himself at a moment where he's under a fair amount of pressure. And I do understand that because he lost pretty badly last week in the elections. The Democrats won 7 governor's mansions. The Democrats won the House of Representatives, majority of state attorney generals, all sorts of seats. It's a pretty big repudiation despite the pickup or two in the Senate. It's a pretty big repudiation, and it's tough.
Well, I want to ask Matt McCovey, again, the Republican strategist, about that, because I think the Democrats are likely to pick up 35 to 40 seats in the House. And
yeah.
Domenico Montanaro from NPR says this is the most seats gained by Democrats in any midterm election in the post-Watergate era. And people are, you know, well aware that in the run-up to the elections, the president just pounded the drums about this invasion from these migrants and sent troops to the border. You know, troop movement is an important thing. And the Trump-friendly Fox and Friends, the drumbeat about this invasion is gone. And if there's a sense that this was being used for an election and it didn't even work, you know, maybe, do you think it backfired?
I do think that the focus on immigration at the end, particularly with birthright citizenship and some of this caravan stuff, probably did backfire. Along the margins, I know we saw that in Texas. Beto O'Rourke's numbers improved in the last couple of weeks, particularly as Trump came to Texas, went to Houston. It was probably net unhelpful there. But look, I think all of this is happening, as I said before, at a very interesting time. He has to decide, you know, can he be successful in the next 2 years? Can he work with Democrats? Obviously, mm-hmm. Democrats want to target him. They want to use subpoena power to go after him. That's not going to create an environment where bipartisan legislative accomplishment can happen. But he has a chance to be successful in the next 2 years. He can still use executive authority to do things. He can try to get these trade deals through Congress. He can continue to see the economy grow. There's an opportunity there. But, you know, the question is, can he kind of reel it in and can he kind of, you know, learn from this midterm election? I think there's a debate about what a wave election is. You know, Republicans took back, I think, 54 seats and then 63 seats in the two big wave elections. It looks like this is going to end up around 38 or 39 seats. But this was a significant election for the Democrats. They did a lot of what they wanted, didn't do everything they wanted. But it's an opportunity for Republicans to learn something from the midterm election mm-hmm. and to correct course, and I hope we do.
Let's talk about the elections that are still ongoing, the counts that are still happening. Today in Washington, Florida Governor Rick Scott is attending the new senator orientation, even though there's a recount in his race. He said he would step down from the state board that officials sign off on election results. His opponent, Bill Nelson, demanded that yesterday. Let's listen.
My opponent isn't interested in making sure that every lawful vote is counted. Instead, he's been using his power as governor to try to undermine the voting process.
Jamal, what happens here and how far are Democrats willing to go to keep this alive?
Oh, Democrats are willing to go all the way to the end because it's important to make sure that the votes get counted in the election. I think Senator Nelson's in a pretty good place to, you know, he might be able to pick up enough votes to make this work. What's really important also is that the Democrats hold faith with the voters they asked to come out. They went very hard to get new voters and irregular voters, and people don't normally show up in midterm elections to vote. And if those votes weren't counted, it's very easy for those people to say, see, you told me to come and it didn't matter. And I think Democrats feel like you've got to make sure those votes count so that you can make sure those voters keep showing up.
Let's stay with the Democrats and Jamal for a second, because, yes, the president has had a rough couple of weeks, I think one could say. But the question is, can the Democrats hold it together? Let's listen to New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, one of the progressives that came out of nowhere to win in New York. Demanding more action on climate change in Nancy Pelosi's office yesterday. Let's listen.
It's not just about confrontation, but in a way it's about real, meaningful unity behind our goals.
And of course, that's Congresswoman-elect Cortez, and people are saying, you know, what a way to start her orientation week. And Jamal, you know, people
it's going to be a fun ride.
Well, is it going to be fun for the Democrats if there is a big fight over the leadership in the House? Nancy Pelosi, her backers are saying she's the one who shepherded a lot of these people into Democrats into House seats. If the Democrats can't hold it together, how can they seize this moment?
Yeah, let me just say this: it would be unprecedented if 100 women come to the United States House of Representatives and the majority of the Democratic freshman class is female or Black, Latino, Asian American, Native American, and we replace the first woman speaker with Seth Moulton. Like, I just don't see where they do that at. I don't see where that happens. So Nancy Pelosi is probably going to be the speaker. We have yet to see a candidate emerge that's going to oppose her. And then Democrats have to learn not just from the House races, but look at the governor's races, people like Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan who ran on fixing the roads. People want things to get fixed.
We'll hold it at that. The Jamal Simmons, the Democrat, host at Hill Television, Matt McCovey, the Republican. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.